Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, lots of us are thinking about what we want to read, either in the backyard hammock, on the beach, or just in your bed before you fall asleep. So today, we're going to chat about female Southern authors. We thought we might inspire you on what your next pickup at either the library or on Audible or at the bookstore might be. So, meet you at the table. I'm Lainey.
And I'm Laura Beth.
And we are
Steel Magnolias.
The strength of steel with the grace of a magnolia. We are here to have uplifting conversations about life in the South.
And we've got plenty of room at our table. So pull up a chair.
Welcome back to the Steel Magnolias podcast. First off, I would like to thank our patrons that make it possible for us to now be well over 150 episodes into this podcast. We have a small but mighty group of monthly supporters, and we'd really like for you to check it out if you haven't already. We offer all kinds of perks, including a bonus episode, and all of our memberships are $20 a month or less. So, this podcast is free, but the perks and the extras are all available at patreon.com/steelmagnolias. So please check that out. The link is going to be in the show notes. And I would like to give a special shout out and thank you to Jennifer of Gallatin, Tennessee, who just crossed her 1-year anniversary of supporting us. So thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's people like you that make this possible because we do have some cost around all this fun stuff.
For sure. For sure. Okay. Well, it is Women's History Month, which is what first sort of pinged our, let's put this in the month of March. On the content calendar, but it's also turning into spring break and summer reading season.
Yeah,
very quickly.
Exactly. So I just feel like it's a very timely topic to talk about some classics and some fun reads by Southern women.
Yes.
Sometime we're going to do the Southern men, too.
Oh, for sure. They'll get their own episode, too. Yeah, but ladies first.
And we could even do poets. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just so many. Mm-hmm. Fun topics.
Yeah, we could even do only modern day Southern authors.
Yeah,
some of the authors we're going to be discussing are still living, but we could do like real modern day, you know, if you've only ones that have published in the last 10 years or something.
That would actually be really cool.
So anyway,
okay, let's see where we go today, because y'all know we haven't looked at each other's notes or anything.
Well, can I start by saying that I'm leery when we mention authors of any kind, because I feel like I'm endorsing them and their storylines, but if y'all have been listening a while, and I think you know I'm super sensitive in different topics and storylines.
Oh, yeah, me too.
In what I read, what I watch, things that I listen to.
And intentionally don't watch and don't listen to.
Yes. A lot of even PG-13, I rate that as an R. That's just my barometer of content. And I'm talking about just for myself.
And it's not from a prudish standpoint so much as it's from a I want to live a peaceful life standpoint, I think, right? I mean, that's what it is for me.
I don't watch Dateline because I can't. There are some storylines of just...
We don't want to know how wicked the heart can be.
And I have lines from like interviews that I still can't get out of my head. Certain things just stick with me.
Yeah.
And I think that's true of a lot of people, but I think a lot of people dismiss it that it's normal. So I have recognized that it's not normal for me. And so I don't read a lot of content, including some of the stuff we're going to talk about today. I take a pass on, but I recognize the importance of it in the literary world.
So, well, that's kind of like, it reminds me of, let's say a movie wins an Oscar.
Yes.
Okay. That doesn't mean that necessarily it's going to be something we like the content of, but it does usually mean there's some sort of reason it excelled.
Sure. Sure.
So, yeah. Same with if somebody book wins a Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah.
You don't have to like what the author's about. You don't have to like the content, but it does typically mean they've excelled in some way.
Yeah. According to some panel of judges.
Right.
And I'm not on that panel. So I'm just commenting on some things some other people recognized. So since you mentioned Pulitzer, maybe we should just start.
Let's just start. With and some they, I didn't even realize there was so many categories of journalism, arts, letters, music.
I didn't either.
I just mostly think about like the fiction aspect of a Pulitzer Prize. But anyhow.
Well, if you are one that uses the resource Goodreads, if you like Goodreads.com, you can actually find a category of Southern Pulitzer Prize winning authors. They're going to be grouped male and female together.
That would have been nice for me to know in prepping for this as I went digging.
Sorry, I should have texted that to you. Anyway, a lot of people use Goodreads. So if you want to even just source it through that, you can definitely do that. The men and the women are there together. But it does kind of feel like we should maybe start with the author that has an enduring legacy, who penned the most popular American novel ever written, Miss Margaret Mitchell.
From Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes.
So I just recently re-listened to this book.
Gone with the Wind. We haven't even said the title yet.
I gave 50 hours.
You finished it?
Oh, I finished it. It's 50. So fabulous.
50 hours.
But I feel like in saying that it's fabulous, I need to preface. Yeah. I'm not one that wants the Old South to be back.
Yeah.
In fact, if I had lived at that time, based on the family I came from, I would not have been living in a plantation home anyway.
Right.
So I'm not wishing for that.
Right.
I'm very uncomfortable with any book that uses the N-word, meaning on the race issue. However, it is both black and white characters that use it in this book, and it's so weird to me.
Yes.
To so hear
weird.
It.
Yes.
Because I don't hear it often, except maybe in a rap song now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so
which
weird.
Which we listen to a lot of. Oh, y'all know that. If you know us well, you know we're regulars.
So all of that makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
However, the themes of this book, the survival and perseverance themes, the love and relationship and figuring out, even sometimes too late.
Right. Yeah.
How that all, those storylines are so fabulous. The character development to me is so good. In this book, and so many different characters. The importance of land and your roots, just all of those themes make me love this book so much.
And like you said, they are timeless. We're all kind of still thinking about that today.
Well, and it was interesting. A lot of the themes of war really had me thinking about the day and age we're in. Some people make it seem more glorious.
Right.
Some people, you know, than it is.
Right.
It's a horrific thing.
Right.
And so, yeah, the themes are timeless. I love it.
So it was published in 1936, and it quickly became a bestseller. It won the 1937 Pulitzer Prize. And in 1939,
The film.
Was the film.
Right.
And we did a whole episode on Gone with the Wind. I think it was season one.
Probably.
That was during the time in our content where we were pairing a lot of topics together.
We thought we needed more than we needed.
Live and learn. So I'm not even sure if we felt like we gave it the full extent of
what it
comments that we wanted, but I do remember, and I'll link to that in our show notes if you want to go back and listen to it.
Well, I think it's 1,000 pages, so it's going to be a doozy to dive into, but man, is it good.
All right. Gone with the Wind. Next. What's Pulitzer? What else won a Pulitzer Prize?
Well, in 1939, Marjorie Rawlings won for The Yearling.
Yes.
So this is, she was lived in Florida most of her life, if not all of her life. And The Yearling was also made into a movie. So some of you may be remembering, I believe it was Gregory Peck was in that movie.
Oh, really? Okay.
Anyhow, themes of this book would be like a young boy coming of age, family themes, definitely a lot of themes of man in the natural world, some mm-hmm. hunting and mm-hmm. different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this book is on some middle school, maybe high
right.
school
high
reading
school.
List.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I would recommend this book. I started reading it, haven't finished it. So maybe there's something in there that I'm going to go, ew.
Yeah.
But I think it's a pretty good one.
Coming of age is a flag in any description for me, be it a coming of age boy or girl story. It just has
a theme
storylines
usually...
that I'm like, I don't want to be reading about this. So okay. isn't, but that's in a lot of descriptions of some classics.
It is.
People love a coming of age story.
Yes. Those shifts in your mm-hmm. innocence and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What you got next?
Let's see. I don't really have any particular order I'm going in. Maybe we need to mention Eudora Welty.
Okay, go there next.
So The Optimist's Daughter. The Optimist's Daughter is the story of Laurel McKelva Hand, who is a young woman who has left the South and returns years later to New Orleans. Everybody loves a good setting of New Orleans, right? Where her father is dying. And after her death, she and after her father's death, she goes with her stepmother and back to the very small town where she grew up. And she starts to understand her past,
yes.
herself, her parents.
Grieving. It's a lot about grieving, the expressions of grief and loss.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So I haven't read this one, but I do think that sounds good.
Yeah.
I like anybody's exploration, like you were saying about Gone with the Wind, of their roots.
Yes.
It's just a nice journey because I think a lot of us see ourselves in some piece of it.
Yeah.
So, and as I'll mention later on, Eudora Welty is a favorite of other Southern authors.
Oh, for sure.
And so, ding, ding, ding. Like, okay, your radar should be going off that she's one to be considering a read from.
Now, she was born and died in Jackson, Mississippi. So we've talked before about Mississippi having so many good authors.
For sure.
And storytellers.
For sure.
I deemed it the storyteller state, you know.
That's right. That's a good one.
Well, we can't go much longer without talking about Harper Lee.
Yes. Yes. Classic.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
Which won the Pulitzer Prize in 1961.
Yes.
She was an Alabama native.
Yes.
Lived there, I believe, her whole life. But what a great, great story of justice and courage, bravery,
mm-hmm.
racial prejudice,
mm-hmm.
Lots of things, topics covered and themes covered in that book.
This is still at the top of most public high school reading lists
and
as
should
well.
Be, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is a classic. And it, too, turned into a feature film starring Gregory Peck.
Yes.
That's not who you were thinking of.
No. I mean,
he just was a big actor at that point. Yeah. So, and Robert Duvall, who took on the role of the mysterious Boo Radley.
That's right.
So, yeah, that one is a classic and synonymous with Harper Lee. Some of these other authors went on to have larger catalogs. We're really focusing on the ones that they won a Pulitzer Prize for, but I mean, Harper Lee and To Kill a Mockingbird.
That's what she was known for.
Yeah.
She was a very dear, close friend of Truman Capote, who we'll have to include in our men's
sure.
episode as well. But
yeah,
let's talk Alice Walker.
Okay, for
born
sure.
Born in Eatonton, Georgia. She won the 1983 Pulitzer Prize for The Color Purple.
So the interesting piece about this novel is that she wrote it in African-American Southern vernacular English, which had never happened before for an entire novel. I'm sure there'd been essays or,
sure,
you know, articles and things that had been written in that language. And it's all written as letters to God, which is a very interesting format.
Yes.
You can sense the pouring out of your heart,
yeah,
in these letters. It documents very traumatic things.
Yeah, the themes of this one make me squirm. But
again, teenagers in traumatic situations that they, of course, should never have
racism,
had to walk through.
Sexism.
Yes. But it's
violence.
It's definitely focused on the two sisters and their relationship of parallels that they have in their lives. And they both encountered horrible difficulties.
I think another theme of this is just the power of your voice that comes out.
Yeah. 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 Now, she's still alive, right?
She is still alive. Yeah. I believe 78 years old-ish.
Yeah. She was born in where? Alabama?
Eatonton, Georgia.
Georgia, excuse me. She's now in Northern California.
Oh.
Is okay. What I read. So, again, this one's on a lot of reading lists. If it were up to me, I wouldn't have my high schooler reading this. There's too many other good classics out there.
Yeah, in fact, I went to see this movie with a friend of mine, and she brought her family, and I was squirming.
Yeah.
Some of it.
Yeah.
I didn't
know
that some of the themes that were in it were going to be in it.
That's hard, because when people hear classic or they've heard a name or a title, whether it be for a book or a film, over and over.
You almost feel like it's safe.
You do. Yeah.
In the sense of not going into deep waters like that. And yeah, I'm sure they had to have some conversations after, because that was.
Yeah. So that was a pretty big film for Oprah Winfrey.
Oh, for sure.
In her acting career. And then, gosh, we've covered The Color Purple on a previous episode, too, because I'm remembering us now talking about
Fathom Events put it out again on its anniversary.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's why. Okay, so Alice Walker, Color Purple. Who else?
I don't think I have any other.
I think that might be it.
Pulitzer Prize winners.
There's a lot more Pulitzer Prize winning men.
Yeah.
Authors, Southern men authors.
I do have a couple more, like, that I wanted to discuss that are deep and unusual.
Okay.
Can we go there?
Yeah.
So one of the most famous Southern authors, female authors, is Flannery O'Connor.
Yes.
Born in Savannah, Georgia, died in Milledgeville, Georgia. And she is known as using the Southern Gothic style writing.
Yes. Okay.
Sigh, because so we both want to talk
ahead
about this.
And just say, I want to get Flannery O'Connor, because there are so many people that I love and respect, authors and other public figures, that like her.
Right. She's a devout Catholic,
and I
know that plays into her writing and theme and the themes that she writes about, or what she's...
Yeah, she has
passed away.
She
only
lived to 39. She had lupus.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah, she had lupus. She wrote two novels and 32 short stories. And yeah, so she lived from 1925 to 1964. So that's an interesting time to be alive.
Yes.
But her characters are grotesque. They are in violent situations.
This is why we have a hard time.
She questions ethics and morals a lot, or she's trying to have the reader question ethics and morals.
Which
sort
I think is part of
door.
Her Catholic, mm-hmm, devout upbringing. And that plays into some of these themes.
Okay.
Destiny, free will. Things like that. Things like...
And I love those things.
Moral decay.
I love moral discussions.
Yeah.
It's the manner in which she paints it that, okay, I really have a hard time with. Now, there is a great local bookstore here in Franklin that has awesome Southern authors and great highlights for local sections, local writers. They have a quota from Flannery.
Okay.
And again, see, she's highly esteemed. So that's why I'm like, I want to get her. So here's the Flannery O'Connor quote. Whenever I'm asked why Southern writers particularly have a penchant for writing about freaks, I say it's because we are still able to recognize one.
Whoa. Now that is fascinating.
So what, what does that say to you? How does that sit with you?
This is how it sits with me. We still have a plumb line of what is socially acceptable.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's right.
Sure.
I'm but just we saying, have a we have a plumb measure. Line for what is socially acceptable. And if it's outside of that, we raise an eyebrow.
Yes.
Whereas in some places, literally anything goes.
Yeah. It's
and you're frowned upon for raising an eyebrow.
Right. Because
now you're the bad guy.
The lane has widened to that's all
socially acceptable. Yeah. That's what I think that means.
I do too.
And I don't believe with her devout Catholic upbringing and knowing that that's important to her, that she is literally esteeming these behaviors. I think she's wanting to just get discussion around things.
Just have the discussion, point it
out. But yet we have a hard time with her, both of us, separately.
So A Good Man Is Hard to Find, 1955. That's a big one. That's a short story
and
of hers.
Doesn't that title draw you in?
Yes. I was such a great title. This is going to be all about how to be a good Southern gentleman.
Oh, no.
Mm-mm. No. So I don't want to. We've talked about it. Oh, or was that on a bonus episode just for our patrons? I don't know if we talked about that publicly on here or not.
Another famous one that I was familiar with was The Violent Bear It Away.
Okay.
Which comes straight from a scripture out of Matthew.
Okay.
And it has a lot to do with, you know, religious themes, violence, etc. She's an unusual
but has to be
writer,
mentioned.
But has to be mentioned. And yeah, I still want to get it. I just kind of don't.
Yeah. We're going to get messages on that one.
Oh, for sure.
And that's fine. I welcome
you. You may just be smarter than me.
That's right.
Maybe that's what it is. Help me understand.
You have a literary lens that I don't, and that's fine.
Help
I get that.
Help me understand. Okay, Zora Neale Hurston. Did you look into her at all?
A little, yeah. She's since passed. She was 1891 to 1960.
So she, born in Alabama, died in Florida. And she had a 1937 novel, Their Eyes Were Watching God, that was quite renowned as well.
So all four of her grandparents had been born into slavery. As I mentioned, she was born in 1891. So, I mean, that alone sets up an author to bring a perspective that is raw. It's heart-wrenching.
And yeah, what that would do to your psyche, I don't even know.
But she was an anthropologist, which, you know, just means she loved that study of culture and the impact that it's having through different ways. But her father was a Baptist preacher and sharecropper who later became a carpenter, and her mother was a school teacher.
Okay.
So I feel like
I
bet her mom and dad were very shaping of her and their community for sure, because they had
both of those jobs.
They had roles where they were shaping. Yeah, where they were speaking to those around them.
Well, obviously that book's going to deal a lot with race and racism, judgment, jealousy, love and desire.
Yeah, she has some of that vernacular in there in bits and pieces. So
like in The Color Purple.
Like I pulled a little quote. Two things everybody's got to do for themselves. They got to go to God and they got to find out about living for themselves.
Okay.
Sorry, that took me a long time because we're not used to reading
like that.
That rhythm is a little difficult. But well, yeah,
that search for unconditional love that only comes from God.
Mm-hmm.
I hope she lands on that's the only place you get that.
I do too.
Anyhow, animals are a close second to me.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine who is a huge Lee Smith fan. So I want to mention Lee Smith.
Yeah, let's go into some like lighter fun stuff. Yeah, because those were all kind of heavy. Transition.
So Lee Smith is still alive. And this is from my friend Lindsay, who lives in Charleston. She said the thing that sticks out most about Lee Smith is her authentic Appalachian voice. The way she's able to capture the true dialect of someone like, say, my grandmother in the written form, I can hear her talking by the way she writes.
That's so precious. It's received well from the community when you've been in the community.
Yeah.
And you're not writing about it.
Exactly. You're not reporting on it.
You're in it.
Yes.
And she is from a small coal mining town.
So she also says that what she loves about Lee Smith is the way she uses women's lives and tells the story of our ancestors through their eyes. She said it's been a really long time, but she read oral history 2 different times and absolutely loved it. She went on to read Fair and Tender Ladies after that. So she.
I want to read that. That's written in letter style. I think I would love it.
You would. Yeah.
Letters. And yeah. It covers a broad span. I want to say
so like
World War I or II through Vietnam.
Okay. I was going to say about 40 years. So,
yeah.
So she was dating a guy. This is, again, still my friend talking about how much she loves Lee Smith. She was dating a guy when she was in college, and he was going to Appalachian State, which is in Boone, North Carolina. And they made the entering freshman class read oral history by Lee Smith as an introduction to the area.
That's cool.
So students that were coming from outside of Appalachia had a true flavor of the people that lived there.
That's cool.
I thought that was really good. And so anyway, that's actually how my friend Lindsay heard about Lee Smith, was this guy she was dating had to go read oral history.
And that was her introduction.
And then he passed
it
on, to her. But she's got several different titles out.
She did a book that's interesting to me called The Last Girls, I think is the title. Anyhow, it's these girls have in high school gone down the Mississippi River.
Yes.
And then later have a reunion and go down the Mississippi River, I think on a cruise.
Yeah. Oh, this
or
time
something.
On a cruise.
So
yes,
that
yes,
sounded
yes.
cute to me.
Yes. Yeah. That does sound cute. Okay. Patricia Neal, anyone?
Oh, go there.
AKA Fannie Flagg.
That's right.
Sorry, I thought that's where you were about
yes.
to go. Okay.
I was just going to say one of our favorites and prior guest on the show.
What an honor that was. We did get to interview her. And so I'm definitely going to link to that in our show notes if you're a Fannie Flagg fan. She is still living, of course, and she is
77 now?
I think so. Yeah.
Born in Birmingham.
She calls Birmingham home. She's now in California as well.
Splits her time.
I think so,
that's my understanding.
Yeah. Early in her career, though, she was known as an actress and a comedian.
Oh, for a long time.
Yeah. So in 1987, she published Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, which remained on the New York Times bestseller for 36 weeks. I've read several of hers. I really liked a book called Standing in the Rainbow. But she has dyslexia.
She mentioned that when we talked to her. And that's just interesting to me as a writer.
Yeah.
That she overcame.
So she told us, again, I'll link to the show notes if you want to hear our full interview with her. But she came as a young girl to the Santa Barbara Writers Conference because her idol, Eudora Welty, was going to be there.
Yes.
So we mentioned Eudora earlier. And they were assigned to write a short story while there. And the theme had to be childhood. So she sat there a little nervous because she has dyslexia. She's writing out her story, which actually was Daisy Fay and the Miracle Man. And she decides, I'll write it as if this is a sixth grader writing. Because that way...
they won't notice.
It would make sense for there to be mistakes.
Yes.
Well,
it's amazing.
Here comes Eudora Welty announcing her as the winner of the short story. And I guess you'd say the rest is history. So
she's been acknowledged in lots of different realms. In 2012, she won the Harper Lee Award for Distinguished Alabama Author of the Year.
That's awesome.
And then this is kind of unique, I would think, for a writer. She got an Academy Award and Writers Guild Award for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Love it when the author of a book writes the screenplay. Yes. It's the closest you're going to get.
That's right.
To the film actually resembling in some way.
Gets their nod. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I love that it's almost like a insider sort of thing to know. She uses a lot of her characters in other novels. Not in their entirety, but she would just have them, if they've been a main character in one book, they're a side character in another. And it's just fun to notice that.
Totally. And I bet you they're people that she really knew. You know what I mean? Oh, like based on like her favorite aunt or her.
Yeah. But you might be reading one of her
school and
her novels and go, neighbor Dorothy, isn't that the woman that had the radio show and so Standing cute. In the Rainbow? You know,
that's
and then
cute.
You, so it's just fun. It almost feels like a little inside secret
yes.
kind of.
Yes.
If you know, you know. So, yeah, I definitely love Fanny Flagg and have read several of hers that are, they are fun and light reads.
Great for the beach.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I read one that I think would be great for the beach recently. Different author
yeah.
that one of our listeners told me about, Beth Hoffman.
Okay.
The one I read was Saving CeCe Honeycutt, and it takes place mostly in Savannah, Georgia. Adorable little read.
That's a great title.
Saving CeCe Honeycutt. So check that one out. Laura Beth, I think you would like it. It's cute and
it's PG.
Mostly light. There's a couple of things. Maybe if you're listening in the car, you wouldn't want your kid to hear, but not totally inappropriate or anything.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It might make you squirm a little.
Yeah.
You know, another book I really enjoyed that I wanted to mention on here because it's newer is Where the Crawdads Sing.
Gotta mention it.
By Delia Owens. And it takes place in the Louisiana, like, swampland basically.
Yeah.
But very interesting read, and there will be a movie of this coming out July 22nd
of
this year.
Oh, it's this year. Okay, so cool.
You might want to read it before the movie to see if it's even close.
She had all the particulars of the wildlife in that book because she is a zoologist, and I love that she's 72 years old. And
that was her first.
Yeah, first
novel.
I
love that so much. There's hope for me.
First novel. I know. I loved the quote I recently saw that said something to the effect of, don't ask somebody that's made it on a 40 under top 40 under 40 list how they got there. Talk to a 70-year-old bestseller.
I love it.
That had their first novel, you know?
So good.
So that is fun.
All the generations need each other. We need to pick each other's brains.
Yeah. But what I did hear from this list is almost all of these have been turned into films.
That's so interesting.
So that is, I guess, just a almost like an easy script. If it's a best-selling book, then I bet it'll do well at the, I always say at the box office, but that phrase doesn't even really apply anymore.
So weird. Well, almost always the book is better.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, yeah, almost always. Some of them get pretty close.
Yeah.
But the book's always better.
And I think that goes to you the reader, get to make the character how
you want
envision
them to look.
Them. And that's when
right.
that doesn't match up to what you see on the screen, there's a disconnect because you've already walked the whole journey with this character and here they are looking different or acting different.
Or I'll tell you something else that really affects me. Maybe this is an immature thing, but I think one of the reasons I really love British and Irish movies is I don't know those actors.
Yeah.
So I don't have a preconceived...
True.
You know, if it's Jennifer Aniston, I have my own thoughts of what she's like.
Yep. Yeah.
Be that good or bad.
Right.
Or whatever. But if it's this
yeah,
random lady that looks pretty normal, she's a little pudgy and doesn't have perfect teeth. Like, this is somebody that I actually might know.
Yes.
Unlike the Hollywood beauties.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense.
And I think that's why books also, you can have them the way you want them
exactly.
to be.
Exactly. Exactly. That makes sense.
This was fun.
It was fun. So we wish you all happy reading. And Lainey, peace be with you.
And also with y'all.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.